Good morning. Welcome to Unity Church on this spring ahead morning. I would like to extend a special welcome to those of you that may be here for the very first time. It is our hope that you will find Unity Church to be a place that helps you find and keep your balance, a place that nourishes you and leads you to live a life of loving integrity and joy and service. I'd like to call your attention to the insert in your order of worship this week at Unity. This can serve as both a roadmap and an invitation to a deeper engagement in the life of this community. And we'd especially like to draw your attention to the Concert for a Cause that is happening this afternoon. It's the drama of voice and poetry, an array of songs from Handel to Libby Larson. Wonderful, wonderful concerts we've had here. We hope you can make that. And Wednesday night at Wellspring Wednesday, we have a special guest, Bill Doherty, who will be talking about how we use our time. The title of his talk is, Can We Talk About Kids' Birthday Parties? And he's a wonderful speaker, so we hope you'll be able to make that. Also, this is the last week that you'll be able to order plants for our partner church fundraiser. So if you would like to order an Easter plant, we hope that you'll do that at the partner church table. Following the service today, you can join us in the parish hall for refreshments. You can greet there old friends and new and peruse our most excellent bookstall and visit the information tables. If you're interested in becoming a member, we hope that you'll visit the welcome table there in the parish hall. Next week, we will be finishing up this series that we've been doing on suffering, and the Reverend Rob Eller Isaacs will be doing a service with Sonia Hazard entitled Gravity and Grace, and we hope that you'll be able to join us then. Pauline Eichten and I would like to greet you following this service at the Portland Avenue doors, and once again, we extend our welcome to Unity Church.
From the poet Thomas McGrath. How could I have come so far and always on such dark trails. I must have traveled by the light shining from the faces of all those I have loved. Come, let us worship together. Please remain standing and join me in reading responsively number 662 in the back of your hymnal. The years of all of us are short, our lives precarious.
Our days and nights go hurrying on, and there is scarcely time to do a little at a time.
Yet we find time for bitterness, for petty treason and evasion.
What can we do to stretch our hearts enough to lose their wills?
Here we are, all of us, all upon this planet, bound together in a common destiny.
Living our lives between the greenness of the daylight and the dark.
Kindred in this, each lighted by the same precarious flickering flame of life, how does it happen that we are not kindred in all things else?
How strange.
Thank you.
Formed. May we learn to show boundless love toward one another and toward our complex and troubled world. Amen.
Good morning. My name is Betsy Hearn, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees, and I'd like to invite Jan to come join me up at the front here and help me here. Jan, it's an honor on behalf of the congregation to recognize the 20th anniversary of your ministry. First, a little history. You were born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a colicky child. April, I had to mix it up for the second service. That's actually April Fool's. I'm not going to go back that far, so you guys can breathe easy. And I don't know about the colic. You'll have to ask her.
It's not true.
Fast forward. Your first career was as a psychologist, but married to Rob, who was a UU minister, you too felt called and attended Star King. The two of you began a co-ministry at Oakland 20 years ago and built that historical but very small congregation into a church that became a leader in the UUA through its passion and innovation. In your career, you've devoted yourself to helping other ministers become settled, to religious education, and to so many other things as well. With us here at Unity since the fall of 2000, you have brought so many gifts of ministry that I'm going to highlight just a few. Your deep passion for pastoral care, your ability to speak the truth or inability to speak falsehood, your sense of humor, your courage in taking personal risks, your spontaneity and compassion, your desire to truly know us as individuals, and lastly, your commitment to justice, which comes not just from your head, but from your whole being. Jan, congratulations on 20 years, and please let's have many, many more.
And there will not be donuts to share this Sunday, but there is cake. So I just want to say that thank you. There wasn't supposed to be any acknowledgement when I let this news out. I leaked it out. But I do want to say that ministry is partnership. And I have been incredibly blessed to be in partnership with phenomenal people, living lives of integrity, service, and joy, and have been just incredibly blessed to dance in partnership with people. And as we all know, that anybody who dances with Fred Astaire looks good. So thank you, Fred.
And will the ushers please come forward? I have heard Jan say countless times that she has staked her life on this faith. And those of us who have staked our lives on this faith, as you are able, we ask only that you give as you are able, but please do give as you are able. Thank you.
Thank you.
The first reading is an excerpt from a work by Star Hawk. We are all longing to go home to some place we have never been, a place half remembered and half envisioned, we can only catch glimpses of from time to time. Community. Somewhere, there are people to whom we can speak with passion without having the words catch in our throats. Somewhere, a circle of hands will open to receive us. Eyes will light up as we enter. Voices will celebrate with us whenever we come into our own power. Community means strength that joins our strength to do the work that needs to be done. Arms to hold us when we falter. A circle of healing, a circle of friends. Someplace where we can be free.
And from The Eros of Everyday Life by Susan Griffin. When I was a child, I was taught to memorize a map of divisions. By this geography, I learned to think of myself as apart from the earth. And by the same plan, the names that society gave me divided me from others, consigned to the background by some, elevated to a privileged fate by others. But none of these names could I recognize myself. The separations narrowed my vision of all existence. Yet the communion is here. The wish for communion exists in the body. It's not for strategic reasons alone that the gathering together has been at the heart of every movement for social change, from the abolition movement to the union movement to the movements for women's, gay, and civil rights. These meetings were in themselves the realization of a desire that is at the core of human imagination. The desire to locate ourselves in community, to make survival a shared effort, to experience a palpable reverence in our connection with each other and with the earth that sustains us. The communion is here, everywhere. Another impulse surfaces. One longs not only to help, to be of use, but to participate, to be defined by the largest arc of meaning that connects flesh and river, sky and word, reverie and the least act of survival. What lies beyond is here, present in every moment of daily life, in each meeting, resonant and calling up response. This is the only hope for the familiar world we cherish. Can we rise to ourselves to see what is in the nature of our souls to see, that we exist on this common ground together?
Thank you.
We were driving along Summit Avenue, quietly appreciating the homes that line that street, when my passenger said shyly, "I have a question for you, but please don't laugh." "Something we cannot understand," she said, "is where are all the people? We see these beautiful, beautiful houses, and we walk the neighborhood looking, but we only see one or two. Where is everyone?" My timid questioner's name is Rabiha. She is from Izmir, Turkey, and she and her father are here in the United States studying and teaching and working to create an interfaith dialogue center in Minneapolis. Rabiha and I drive to seminary together each week, and it has been quite enlightening to hear how our world appears through her eyes. Again and again in these conversations, she returns to her bafflement over what she sees as our society's lack of connection and interrelatedness. "At home," she says, "people spend time together. That's what we do. But here, there's no time for that." Rabiha tells me that she's had to learn an unexpected skill since coming to our country. She came anticipating that the nuances of our spoken language would be a challenge for her, but she's also needed to work at noticing the subtle signals that come over people's faces when conversations begin. When she encounters someone and the greetings are exchanged, she's grown alert to the slight shift of expression that nearly always occurs, a change in the muscles of the face that convey to her, "I don't have time to talk now. I need to go." As Rabiha has tuned her ear to the rhythms and phrasings of our speech, she's grown acutely attuned to this embodied message as well. And out of respect for our culture, she practices making her own face look less expectant. She doesn't want to impose. She fears that her own expression might betray that she's desiring more time than her conversation partner is willing or able to give. She wants to avoid making American social blunders. And she tells me that she's very lonely. Of course, as I listen to her, I recognize the truth about which she speaks, and she's choosing her words carefully because she doesn't want to seem like she's criticizing her friend and driver. But I know that I must accept this indictment along with the rest of us. It has become a truism that the speed at which we live our lives has rendered us a lonely people. It's not a loneliness that merely wants to be in the presence of other warm bodies. We can always find a crowd. But it's the loneliness for those unhurried times of being fully present with one another, sharing life stories, offering understanding, and knowing that we are understood, where words bubble up in relaxed, wide open spaces of caring that can be created between one or two or three or four open hearts. Think of all the times that you have heard or maybe been a party to a conversation like this. Two people approaching, "Hey, how you doing? Good to see ya. I really want to have that cup of coffee with you." And by this time they've passed, so the other one is responding over the shoulder. "Yeah, great, let's get together as soon as we can. Let's do that. I'd love to hear how things are going for you." And they keep moving to wherever it is that they're headed, and they've only lost a few seconds in the exchange. It's woefully commonplace. And the truth is that for many of us, we desperately wish it were not so. Despite our vows to make it different, our calendars fill up rapidly, and we keep thinking that at some point, when the dust settles, then we'll have more time to cultivate our relationships. But somehow, that dust continues to swirl, and new winds come up, and as my southern mama used to say, the hurrier I go, the behinder I get. And we know that the behinder we get, the less space we have for the very things that nourish our spirits, the acts that make us feel grounded and stable and contented in our lives. All too often, we simply don't have time for one another. As a nation, even as we busily perpetuate this reality, we bemoan it. We listen and nod as we hear social commentarians on NPR, and we see the graphics that capture it in the cover of Time and Newsweek. The phenomenon has been analyzed endlessly in websites and books, quite famously about 5 years ago in the book Bowling Alone. Tons of research has been done, and it all generally confirms what we know. We are not happy with our accelerating pace and our growing isolation. And yet, as the pressures of our daily lives mount, one of the first things that we readily sacrifice is the luxury of the time that we devote to creating and deepening, to enjoying, in fact, our bonds with one another. Despite our incredible wealth as a nation, Rabiha sees the United States as an impoverished country. And I think that to whatever degree we concur with her is part of what brings us here each week. We enter this place for so many reasons, but one is because we want to feel the companionship of others with whom we journey through this life. We may have deep friendships, and we may know this place to be one of warm hugs, or we may know very few, and we may have come here hoping that this might be a place where true bonds of connectedness could be formed. We chose to come here this morning against the other options that we had. We might have reached a moment of transcendence at home in front of our meditation altar or taking a walk by the river. But it's likely that we came here this morning because we desire to receive the spiritual nourishment and feel the poignancy of this communal spiritual experience. Dr. Leon Spencer is a prominent UU lay leader, and he tells us that church means a community that has been called out, a place where that which is holy and sacred is known, where compassion is a way of being. Let me read his words once more. Church, this place we are, means a community that has been called out. It is to be a place where that which is holy and sacred is known, where compassion is a way of being. Given what we've been describing about our nation's social impoverishment, this sounds incredibly countercultural. This spiritual home represents a place called out, set apart, where we are intentionally interrupting that blur of activity, where we are deliberately slowing our pace, and we are creating together a space of sanctity and compassion. This vision is what compels the many offerings for connectedness that are available here. The ministry teams, the covenant groups, the religious ed classes, affinity groups, coffee hour, all of it has been designed to bring vibrancy to this place and to help us grow our rootedness together, that we might learn how, together, to open our hearts toward one another and toward our world. But we know that this does not happen on its own. As in all intimate relationships, this comes through our agreement that we determinedly want it to be so. We covenant anew each day to create such a holy and sacred place. We allow it to emerge in the myriad ways we give and receive with one another, in the ways that we offer ourselves, and in the ways that we accept the support of others. It becomes more real each time we share a difficult conversation together in humility, and we desire to genuinely know what it is like to be the other. This sort of community is a very precious gift, and it can be an incalculable resource in our lives. I was once pointed to a single magical moment in the worship service that captures the sense of all of this for me. It's that particular instant that settles in on us during the silence after the responsive reading. I've learned now to live that unadulterated moment when we are purely and simply experiencing the sacredness of our being together. The stirring ceases. The papers stop rustling, and as a gathered company, we relax into a blessed moment of our full presence with one another. And when it occurs, It feels like an exquisite droplet of time, a moment laden with peace and expectation. We are here. We are together. And it's times like that that we know that those strange and foolish walls of separation from our responsive reading are much more like very, very thin veils that could easily be pushed aside if only we will. And after the silence, we enter that embracing meditation and we lift up the stuff of our lives, our joyfulness, of course, but also our pain and our worries, the sorrows from this congregation and from communities all across the globe. We hold people who are being asked by life to absorb great loss and limitation, grief and death, harsh diagnoses, awful fears about what's coming next. Our communal heart breaks with each name and each circumstance. But the funny thing about hearts is that sometimes it seems like the more they break, the softer they become. Alice Walker, that marvelous activist and author that she is, was asked how she envisions her own heart after all the suffering that she has known and after all the injustice that she has seen. And she said, "You know what hearts are for? Hearts are there to be broken. And I say that because that seems to just be part of what happens to hearts. I mean, mine is broken so many times that I've lost count, but it just seems to be broken open more and more and more, and it just gets bigger. In fact, my heart by now feels open like a suitcase. It feels like it's just sort of dropped open, you know, like how a big suitcase just falls open. It feels like that. Like a big, old, much-traveled suitcase. And sometimes you can catch a sense of the Heart of Unity Church falling open, bigger and bigger, as each of us adds our own ability to expand it and allow it to hold more and more as we reach deeper and deeper into our own souls and as we push our doors out open wider and wider, as we humbly seek to understand what true hospitality means in this frantic world of ours. And as I speak about this, I am profoundly aware that my own family has been carried in that suitcase that is Unity Church. Many of you know that I started here as an intern back in 2003. It was a full speed ahead time of my life. I was totally focused on my own plans and strategies, and then the unthinkable happened. Suddenly, all those carefully lined up pieces of my life scattered and all of my urgencies faded because my thoroughly adored 23-year-old son's cancer had returned and it spread to new places and it was much more serious than the first occurrence 3 years earlier. He needed to begin his treatments right away. It was a terrible, terrible time for us. Such news can bring us to our knees. No pleading for favors or attempts at celestial arm twisting, but in the excruciating awareness that the weight of life feels far too great to bear. Our well-honed self-sufficiency suddenly seems wholly inadequate to keep us upright. Despite the cultural messages that tell us that we should be able to weather life's tragedies alone, they tell us to endure, to keep a stiff upper lip, to carry on. I'm here to tell you without shame that during that time, I could not keep my upper lip stiff. I deeply needed to know that you and others were with me. It was a great comfort to me when I would hear that Tim had been named in the embracing meditation, that your caring was being sent to us over the miles. You were doing what communities do. You couldn't change our situation, but you did help carry us through. Outside the oncology unit at the medical center over in Wisconsin, these words are engraved. The power of community is that the need of one becomes the need of many, and the courage of one becomes the strength of all. Every time we would enter that building, and we entered it so many times, I lingered there at my stone reminder that no matter how cruel the day, we were not alone. And one day, back home after a particularly difficult chemo session, Tim was downstairs, curled up and quite miserable on the couch. The doorbell rang, and it was one of my colleagues from seminary carrying a large box, a gift from my UTS compatriots. Students, faculty, and staff had all joined together to make Tim a beautiful and wacky quilt. And I'm told that while it was being made, the pieces remained out on a table in the cafeteria so that as folks walked by, they could sign it or draw a picture, they could write a joke, a prayer, a word of inspiration, but many of them just placed their hands on it. They touched the patches and the strips, and in doing that, they sent Tim their love. It was an incredible gift that they gave us. And that day, as I took that quilt downstairs and I gently covered my fitfully dozing son, I felt all the hands of all the communities surrounding, covering Tim with their energy and their hope. And once again, I knew that no matter what came, we were not alone. That quilt symbolized so much during Tim's journey back to health. Neither he nor I will ever forget it. And when I returned here to Unity Church last year, I was so glad to learn that we also have quilts. They were lovingly made by members for the ministers and the pastoral care providers to bring to folks who are suffering. One of them is here. And isn't it beautiful? The hands are actually on it. Sometimes, when lives feel as if they are crumbling, something like this can hold the remembrance of the loving hands of this community supporting those aching homes and hearts. Some might consider it a very small gesture, but it can be significant beyond words. It holds our communal commitment that if the person is unable to muster the physical or emotional strength to come and be among us, we want them to know that our spirits are going there to be with them. Or if the best they can do is come and find some inconspicuous place in the back of the church and just sit and allow the tears to fall, we want them to know that we welcome them to do that and we will sit silently with their tears. Other Sundays, maybe they're actually able to come and participate and be available to receive the tenderness that flows from eyes and voices of others. I think of Charlie and Jen Vanek after the news of Aaron's recurrence, and how they graciously stood in the parish hall and they welcomed us into the depth of their pain and into the fervency of their hopes. It must have been an exhausting day for them, but I'd wager that they also drew comfort and vitality from the power that comes from being held in a community such as this. What we share here is quite an extraordinary gift in this lonely, lonely world. There are so many who are without connection and who have no idea how to find it. This is one of the mighty reasons that we need to let others know about our faith. It is a saving faith. It has saved me in my lowest times. It has saved countless others. The connections that we make here is the very stuff of life. Here, we learn over and over again that together we are able to do what none of us could do alone. The big old suitcase that is this church's heart is big enough and soft enough to hold our tears and our silence and our pain. Together, we are a community, and so when we feel overwhelmed, there are those among us who can offer assurances and can keep us from giving up. When our throats are too tight to let the music out, others can pick up our song. When the crush of life buckles our knees, we know that we have a place that will help carry us through, a community that will be there to help us heal after the jagged crisis has passed. It is a beautiful truth and an uncommon one that we acknowledge as we sit here today that we do need one another. We know we are all in this together and that there are those among us right now who are experiencing the kind of pain that I've been describing. And there are others of us who are being called to respond. We are called to be the soft hearts, called to be the strength bearers, called to be the hope holders. If we genuinely desire this to be a community that is called out for all those who come here, then we can each accept both being the needed and the one in need. Together, it is in our power to make this a sacred and holy place where compassion truly is our way of being together and being within these walls and then far, far beyond. Maybe as you leave here today or as you pass by it, the next time you see the quilt, you might want to just lay your own hand against it and put in there your energy and your love and your hope for the next one of us who will inevitably need it. So that whatever comes, none of us may ever, ever doubt we are not alone. May it be so, and amen. As we leave here today, let us give great thanks for this community of love and all that is available to us. And let us be also very aware that we are called to be healers and transformers for ourselves, for our community, and for our greater world. Go in peace.